Chapter 15, let's talk Turkey. 15, the Muslims break their fast. The Turkish holidays of Bayram, which marked the end of Ramadan, fell the third weekend we were in Turkey. I was waked at dawn out of a sound sleep by the booming of the cannon, and I lay very still waiting for the roommate to hear them and jump to the window to see if the Russians had come. I had been warned by Mrs. Dorr when I was in Ankara about this bombardment. She said it had seared her soul and Mr. Dorr half out of their wits the first time they had heard it, but I didn't think the roommate had been warned, and I was sure he, on awaking, would be highly excited, to say the least. I had no intention of letting him suffer long, just 3 or 4 minutes. I would tell him before he began arousing the consulate, but darn it, he slept through the whole racket. The Russians could have taken Istanbul and me too before he opened an eye. When the volleys died down, I, disappointed, went back to sleep, but not the Orthodox Muslims. For them and for all of Turkey, this was a big day, the first of three. It is the nearest thing to our Christmas that the Turks have. They feast for hours to make up for the month of fasting, and they give presents, mainly, I understand, handkerchiefs and candy, but the clothing sections of the Great Bazaar the day before were jammed with people buying children's dresses, underwear, shirts, shoes, scarves, stockings, ribbons, hats, and everything else you could think of. It was like a dozen Sears Roebuck rolled into one on Christmas Eve. Most of the shops were closed the 3 days of Bayram, and the streets and buses and cars were decked with Turkish flags and bunting. The roommate and I had a date to have lunch with Dr. and Mrs. Black at the restaurant on the third floor of the customs house, overlooking the harbor. Dr. Black had selected it because, he said, there was always so much to see, and it was clean and served good food. There was so much to see, and the food was good, but the restaurant that day was shockingly dirty. The stairs leading to the third floor were littered with papers, cigarette and cigar butts, and other refuse, and the tuxedo of the waiter who had served us was so spotted with grease it could have been difficult to get another splash of gravy on it, and his white shirt was soiled and his face unshaved. "Poor fellow," said Dr. Black, "he has evidently been up all night serving the revelers. We have chosen a bad day to come here. I lost sight of the fact that it was the first day of Bayram. This place was no doubt packed all night with celebrating Muslims. Naturally, the waiters have had no time to clean up." We tried to ignore the disorderliness by concentrating on the busy life of the harbor. Several freighters were anchored in a good ways out, waiting to be unloaded, but the Moline Victory was not among them. We weren't surprised, for we had received no word she had docked, but she was due any minute now. This was the 20th day since our arrival. Perhaps she was behind that point of land poking out into the Sea of Marmara. After she docked, we would have, we understood, only 3 days more in Istanbul. That was the time it would take to unload, according to the estimates of the prudential officials. While scanning the horizons for the Moline Victory, a rather large ship from some nearby Turkish port docked directly in front of the customs house, and people poured off, clutching baskets and newspaper-wrapped bundles. They were undoubtedly peasants. Their faces were rugged, and their clothes, though mostly new and surprisingly gay, were sleazy and ill-fitting. "They are coming to Istanbul to spend the holidays," Dr. Black said. "The great majority of them have no doubt never been here before, and yet it is the place they want most to come to. Istanbul means very much more to the Turks than Washington means to the citizens of the United States. It is hard to explain. It is their one big cosmopolitan city, their touch with the great outside world. For centuries, it was the head of their Muslim faith, the seat of their government, the wellspring of everything that happened to them. Today, it is a great day for them. They have finally got to Istanbul." In silence, we watched them crowding like cattle down the gangplank. There were many women with children, 3 and 4 and 5 years old, dressed in bright red, pink, or yellow cotton. Policemen, not a bit stern like the one we who arrested Mr. Big stood at the foot of the gangplank and helped them off. A few were met by relatives and friends, but most of them wandered off by themselves to discover the city. These people were the real Turks, Dr. Black pointed out. 80% of the Turkish population is still peasant and solely dependent upon agriculture, which means that of almost 21 million people, Turkey has some 16.5 million peasants. The vast majority of these live in Anatolia, the Asiatic part of Turkey. Anatolia contains 287,037 of Turkey's 296,503 square miles. These figures didn't mean much to me. Figures never do. But Dr. Black's remark that Turkey is three times the size of Great Britain and slightly larger than France did. It's even bigger than Texas, he said. You'd better not let a Texan hear you say that, the roommate warned. The last peasant off the boat and the last raspberry eaten, Dr. Black suggested that we climb the hills to Pera and go to a bookstore run by two English women. There, he thought, we might find some more books about Turkey. I wasn't at all complimented by the implication in this. Here I was, after all, my reading and sightseeing. Fancying myself an old Turkish expert and Dr. Black urging further research upon me. Golly, what did he want me to turn into? A bookworm? I wasn't for it. I'm really frightened of too much learning. My southern upbringing has conditioned me against it. But nevertheless, I let myself be led thither, and when I departed, I was the possessor of a tome of 472 pages, Memoirs of Halid Edib. It was my Bayram present. End of chapter 15.